Michael Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about Japan's greatest victory, Britain's worst defeat, the capture of Singapore in 1932, written by the mastermind behind it all, Colonel Mansubu Suji. And so far we're up to episode 35, each lasting about 20 minutes, my reading capacity at this point in time, as I gradually improve. And we've read through the entire book, starting off with the planning in what is it, Formosa or Taipei or some place like that, and then the whole invasion of Thailand dressed as Thai soldiers waving white flags, and then an increasingly confident enemy smash the British all the way down, bicycle blitzkrieg, quite a heroic fight, an intense fight for Singapore itself, and then a sudden surrender. And it's knowing what happens to the poor people who are captured afterwards, you'd think that they would really want to fight on, but you can't do it. You can just read it through here. And as the solemn victory celebration, they're a true elite force. They focus on their dead and then focus on going into Borneo straight away. And then a list of citations are read at the end of this, which are a good thing, because the detail of the citation is actually in the detail of the book. In fact, the citations have been used a little bit to write the book. And in his days before, his research days before researching the Malay invasion, this particular, he is actually a mastermind behind it, the equivalent of Japanese Rommel. He wrote this pamphlet to get the correct demeanour of troops. Now, that being said, there's a lot of things that he says in his book which doesn't add up. He says that we only thought of it a month or so before the invasion, yet there's talk of them discussing in detail with the Germans the invasion of Malaysia and getting, oh, Malaya, and getting some feedback from the Germans about how it could be done and some of the problems with it. There's also that, oh, we spontaneously there, we just, we've manufactured all these bikes, so they've manufactured the bikes well ahead and had them there ready to go. And so a lot of the story here behind it, which makes the Japanese look more heroic and super planned, it's there. It's actually quite a little bit sickening to read about the way the Allies or the Australians got smashed up. They fought hard in the local areas, but there was always this tactic where the Japanese would outflank them going through impenetrable jungles each time. And then that was again repeated as a fairly classic tactic up in the Kokoda Trail going forward. And it's also the realization that obviously this man, there must have been a underground Japanese army network to keep the idea and documentations ready as he went underground for a number of years. There's also these other cultural aspects that he only ever mixed. Everyone only ever mixed with military people. The army and navy were separate, everything was not oriented to. There was some sort of vague ideas of greater Asians fighting for Asia and all this type of stuff, but really it was a cult of emperorship. They were all really focused on the emperor. And so when they died, they would say, "I'm dying for the emperor." A lot of these things, a lot of citations focus on emperor worship. So something has gone wrong in the, I suppose, from my perspective, it's gone wrong in the build-up. The sort of psychology, national psychology and build up, and therefore it would be wrong to actually build our future based on a problem, national adolescence problems. However, there are elements of the behaviour seen in this that you can see in modern day society. So this is where people defend positions, blow up bridges, metaphoric bridges, let off lots of ammunition when they're frightened. So you can see from a tactical point of viewpoint there's some lessons to be learnt here. So this is a pamphlet that he wrote. The pamphlet referred by the author on page 9 has been translated by G.W. Sargent, Department of Oriental Studies, University of Sydney, Australia. So this is a pamphlet, and he has actually put it across, and it's actually a fantastic story pamphlet. So it's a pamphlet that he didn't want you to know about. So this is good. There are certain things that he's telling you, but there's certain things that he really wouldn't want you to know about, and sort of he lets slip in the book. Okay. And so those birds you hear are sulfur-crested cockatoos. So the pamphlet is Read This Alone and the War Can Be Won. This is a book written by him. In preparing this book, the aim has been to give officers other ranks a thorough grounding in the purpose and special characteristics of the campaign in South Asia. And attention has been devoted in particular to the following features, and his numbered list. 1. Military, ideological, economic aspects of the campaign have to be treated together. 2. Regulations contained in the general operations orders have been summarised. Only those relevant to special conditions of tropical warfare have been included. 2. So, again, this is interesting. 3. From Notes on Tropical Warfare, a selection has been made of those articles of direct importance to the soldier. 4. The book is designed to be read quickly without strain in the cramped conditions of a transport vessel. Yeah, so this is, you know, amazing. 5. The style is simple, and that the sense may be readily understood by all ranks, including NCOs and private soldiers. 2. The book is a synthesis of a variety of already existing materials, indebted to the opinions solicited from many quarters, and incorporates the fruits of training exercises carried out. Our research under simple conditions, it is intended for distribution to all officers and all ranks immediately upon embarkation, Imperial Army Headquarters. There you go. Chapter 1. The campaign in South Asia, what is it like? A treasure house of the Far East, seized by the British, the Americans, the French and the Dutch. The remarkable exploits of Yamla Desika in Siam, the present Thailand, took place more than 300 years ago. But in the years between then and the 1868, so immediately one understands that Thailand used to be underneath the Japanese. All overseas expansion by Japanese was brought to a stop by a rigidly enforced seclusion policy of the Tokugawa shoguns. In that intervening period, the English, French, and Americans, and Dutch, Portuguese, and others sailed to the Far East as if it was theirs by natural right, terrorized, subjugate the culturally backward natives, and colonized every country in the area. So that is saying that the Japanese had these people who were isolated, so you didn't get your dose of Japan. India and the Malay Peninsula were seized by the British, Annam by the French, Java and Sumatra by the Dutch, the Philippines by the Americans. Well, that's not necessarily correct there. These territories, the richest natural resources in the Far East, were taken by a handful of white men, and their tens of millions of Asian inhabitants have, for centuries, down to our day, suffered constant exploitation and prosecution at their hands. We Japanese have been born in a country of no mean blessings, and thanks to august power and influence of His Majesty the Emperor, our land has never once to this day experienced invasion and occupation by a foreign power. The other peoples of Asia look with envy upon Japan. We trust and honour the Japanese. Deep in their heart they are hoping that, with the help of Japanese people, they may themselves achieve national independence and happiness. 2. 100 million Asians tyrannised by 300,000 whites. 350 million Indians are ruled by 500... 1,000 British, 60 million Southeast Asians by 200,000 Dutch, 23 million Indochinese by 20,000 Frenchmen, 6 million Malays by a few thousand British, and 13 million Filipinos by a few 10,000 Americans. In short, 450 million natives of the Far East live under the domination of less than 800,000 whites. If we include India, 100 million people are oppressed by less than 300,000. Once you set foot on the enemy's territories, you'll see for yourself only too clearly just what the oppression by the white man means, imposing splintered buildings look down from the summits of mountains and hills to tiny thatched huts of natives. Money squeezed from the blood of Asians maintains the small white minorities in their luxurious mode of life, or disappears into their respective home countries. These white people may expect, from the moment they issue from their mother's wombs, to be allotted a score or so of natives for their personal slaves. Is this really God's will? The reason why so many people in the Far East have been so completely crushed by so few white men is fundamentally that they have exhausted their strength in private quarrels, and that they are lacking in any awareness of themselves as a group, as peoples of Asians. So this is interesting so far. This is interesting that Thailand used to be a Japanese dominion. Three, a world source of oil, rubber and tin. Without oil, neither planes, warships nor cars can move. Britain and America, controlling the greater part of the world's oil, having more than they can use for their own purpose, have nevertheless forbidden the export of oil to Japan, which is desperately short of it. More than that, they even obstruct Japan from buying oil in South Asia. Rubber and tin are likewise indispensable for military operations in the countries of South Asia, which are the richest sources of the whole Far East, for these are valued quantities too. Although our country has sought to purchase them by fair methods, the Anglo-Americans have interfered with this, and in the unscrupulous behaviour of these two countries, in the matter lies one of the reasons why the present campaign has been forced upon us. The Dutch East Indies, the French Indochina, are clearly in no positions by themselves to oppose Japan. But they too, with the Anglo-American bolstering and under the mediation, are maintaining hostile attitude. If shortage of oil and steel is Japan's weak point, the greatest weakness in the American economy is the shortage of rubber, tin and tungsten. There you go. And these are supplied to America from Southeast Asia and Southern China. If Japan can master the area, not only will she gain control of the oil and steel that she needs for herself, but she will strike at America where it hurts most. And therein lies the reason America's extreme dislike of Japan's southward advance and the meticulous manner in which it has striven to obstruct it. It is interesting. The other important thing which they didn't count on is quinine, the quinine plants. That's a very interesting story. A world, four, a world of everlasting summer. Now, this theatre of war knows no season. It is subject throughout the year to heat incomparable to the heat of midsummer Japan. Hence, we call it a world of everlasting summer. Heat commences soon after sunrise, which is the peak about noon, and continues until sundown. Monsoons vary in different localities, but in general, southwest winds prevail from May to September, northwest winds from November to March. At this time, thunder and heavy rain is commonly after midday. These extremely violent cloud bursts, known as squalls, are in quite a different class from the summer downpours we know in Japan. They are welcome insofar as they clear the oppressive atmosphere, but they also crumble roads, wash away bridges, and thus considerably hamper troop movements. Again, because of the high humidity, gunpowder becomes affected by the damp. Rifles, artillery, ammunition rust, spectacles mist over, and electric batteries run down quickly. A beautiful story. There are the fruits available throughout the year, like bananas, pineapples, but troublesome malaria mosquito is everywhere, harbouring its grudge. In Java and Singapore region, where the country has been opened up, motor roads run in all directions, but many undeveloped areas of forest or marshland within a man or horse can pass. The temperature is high, as has been stated, but is by no means an uncomfortable climate in which to live. The sea is near, and there's always a breeze. Indeed, it is for this reason that this is sought by so many white people to have chosen their lands as their homes. Chapter 2. Why must we fight, and how should we fight? Obeying the Emperor's august will for peace in the Far East. In 1868, restoration by the abolition of feudal clans and establishment of prefectures returned Japan to the ancient system of beneficent government by His Majesty the Emperor, and thereby rescued the country from a grave peril. for the black ships, the foreigners which had come to Nagasaki and Niigata were already to annex Japan on the slightest pretext. The new restoration of the 1930s has come about as a response to the imperial desire for peace in the Far East. So this is interesting. So this is a restoration, a new restoration. I really have to understand this. Its task is to rescue Asians from white aggressions and the restoration of Asia to Asians. And when peace in Asia has been won, the firm assumption of peace throughout the whole world. The Waipul is giving aid to Chiang Kai-shek and moving him to make war on Japan with the British and Americans. Oh dear. The rise of Japan being to these people like a sore spot on the eye. They have tried every means in their power to obstruct our development, and they are inciting the regime of Chung King, the French Indo-Chinese, and the Dutch East Indians to regard Japan as their enemy. Their great hope is for the destruction of Asian peoples by mutual strife, and their greatest fear is that, with the help of a powerful Japan, peoples of Asia will work together for independence. If the people of Asia, representing more than half the world's population, were to make a united stand, it would indeed be a sore blow to the British, Americans, French, Dutch, and the like, who for centuries have battened and waxed the blood of Asians. Already Japan, the pioneer in this movement in the Far East, has rescued Manchuria from the ambitions of the Soviets and set China free from the extortions of the Anglo-Americans. Her next great mission is to assist towards the independence of the Thai, Amanese, Filipinos, and bring a blessing of freedom to the natives of South Asia, Indian people, in which we will be fulfilling the essential spirit of, quote, one world to the eight corners of the earth. That hurts. Eight corners of the earth. What does that mean? The aim of the present war is the realization, first in the Far East, of His Majesty's august will and ideal that the properties and that the peoples of the world should be granted possession of their rightful homelands. To this end, the countries of the East, Far East, must plan a great coalition of East Asia, uniting their military resources and ministering economically to each other's wants on the principle of coexistence to the common good, mutually respecting each other's political independence through the combined strength of such coalition, we shall liberate East Asia from the white invasion and oppression. The significance of the present struggle we have shown is immense, and the peril which Japan has drawn upon herself as a central and leading force in the movement is greater than anything she has ever faced since the foundation of the country. The people of South Asia deeply respect the Japanese and place great high hopes upon our success. It is vital, above all, that we should not betray this respect and these hopes. For this reason, close attention should be paid to the points of the following section. 2. Treat natives with kindness, but do not expect too much for them. These 100 million natives, treated as slaves by 300,000 white, are physically, in colour and in their eyes and skin, not unlike ourselves. They should, by rights, have received from the gods at birth the inheritance of homelands which they treasure, house of the world. And if you stop to wonder for what part sins may now groan beneath the white man's oppressive rules, you will well pity them. To the natives, whether you look at the matter from a geographical or from a historical viewpoint, the British, Americans, French and Dutch are mere armed brothers, while the Japanese are brothers. At least we are indubitably relatives. But there are, even among the natives themselves, many who have become tools of the white men, who spy for them, sell their blood brothers and betray Asia. Such people are particularly numerous in the higher ranks of the civil service and in the army. And these people would we should eliminate as persons who do mischief. Oh no, God! But if they do come to offer submission, we must have the magnanimity to welcome and pardon them. But countries of great natural blessings, there is possible for men to live in nakedness and eat without working, breeding large populations of idlers. What is more, after centuries of subjection to European and exploitation of the Chinese, these natives have reached a point of almost complete emasculation. We may wish to make them men of them again quickly, but we should not expect too much. Oh God. Respect native customs. The majority of natives are Mohammedans, Islamic, just as Buddhists faithful to revere Buddhists and Christians for very Christ, Muhammadians, by ancient custom, prostrate themselves reverently in the direction of Mecca, the ancient city of Central Asia, in which Muhammad was born. Again, Muhammadians never in any experiences eat the flesh of pigs, which are deprived of unclean animals. You will see men with white brimless hats on their heads. These are Muhammadians who have made a pilgrimage to Mecca, and they are greatly respected amongst the natives. In all villages and towns, there are places of worship called mosques, and even people in the most exalted situations must remove their shoes before entering them. To enter wearing muddy boots would be a great affront to the natives. The weekly religious holiday is not Saturday, but Friday. Even on normal days, it is custom to cease work for several minutes at a certain time in order to bow towards Mecca and worship. At the end of the year, a long month fast is observed. Oh, gee, this, haven't got that fully right, because it's a lunar month, so it moves throughout the year. No food is taken during the day, only at night at light meal. In our society, it's polite to remove one's hat on entering a house, but the native custom is to keep the hat on. Again, the left hand is regarded as clean. No paper is used in the toilet, but the anus is washed by water with the left hand. Hence, you must never use the left hand offering things to people. You must not touch the body of another person with it. Natives rejoice greatly at small profits which they can see in their own eyes, and have no understanding of greater profits in the future. When making purchases, he is careful to pay at once and not to make unreasonable deals. In general, natives think of their own special customs and habits as things of the greatest importance and value. If you fear with these customs, no matter how kindly your intentions, you will not be thanked. On the contrary, you will incur resentment. It is essential to refrain from well-meaning expressions of your own opinions, respect native traditions, and avoid unnecessary friction. Destroy the genuine enemy, but show compassion for those who have no guilt. In Japan in recent years, there's no one who cannot read English and cannot proceed to higher education, where English is widely used in all first-class hotels, trains, steamships. We have unthinkingly come to accept Europeans as superior and to despise the Chinese and peoples of the South. This is like splitting into our own eyes, bearing in mind that we Japanese, as Eastern people, have ourselves long been classed alongside the Chinese and Indians as an inferior race, and treated as such. We are very least, here in Asia, beat the Westerners to submission. That they may change their arrogant, ill-mannered attitude. The present war is a struggle between races. We must achieve satisfaction of our just demands with no thought of leniency to the Europeans, unless they be Germans and Italians. By pillaging, molesting women, and heedless slaughter or maiming people who offer no resistance, or any action which may sully the reputation of Japan as a country of moral rectitude, should be condemned by all the strongest terms. You must do nothing to impair your dignity as soldiers of His Majesty the Emperor in His Majesty's Army. You must in particular show compassion towards the old and towards the women and children. Who are the overseas Chinese? 650 years ago, the Mongol Emperor Kublai Khan came to attack Japan. His invading army suffered almost complete annihilation and was smitten with the divine storm Kamikaze at Hakata Bay. Soon after this, Kublai Khan sent an expeditionary force against what is now known as Java. 300,000 troops were borne, a fleet of 1,000 ships landed on the northeast of Java with the object of seizing the rear treasure of Asia, but withdrew again thanks to the cunning of the enemies with little or no booty. Well, that's it, but they were sort of a satellite kingdom. I sort of read about that. But about the time the Chinese began to immigrate in large numbers to South Asia, and gradually rising the humble positions as clerks, errand boys, and coolies, they became men of wealth, and deceiving the naturally lazy natives, including with the British and American, French and Dutch, to increase their economic power, and today are the whole area of 5 million Chinese colonists. They contribute military funds to Chongqing, but most of them are either led astray by Chongqing propaganda or are forced by terrorists, whether they wish or not, to make those contributions. We must offer these people an opportunity for self-examination and guide them over to our side. Two points, however, should be noted. First, these people, by a variety of clever schemes, concerted with the Europeans administrators are steadily extorting money from the native population, and the greater part of the natives' resentment is directed against them rather than against the Europeans. And second, for the most part, they have no racial or national consciousness, and no enthusiasm outside making money. Consequently, you must realize in advance that it will be difficult by merely urging them to intellectual awareness of themselves as members of the Asian Brotherhood to enlist their cooperation in any scheme which does not promise personal profit. Very interesting. And this is just what the Japanese are saying. And be strong, correctly behaved, and self-controlled. Okay, this is 25 pages in, and this is item 6 of chapter 2. So I've got 6, 7, and 8, and 9 of chapter 2. Chapter 3, chapter 4. Oh God, chapter 5, camp in the tropics, the battle. There's many chapters on this, my friends. Hygiene, chapter 15. And this is a major go. This is chapter 18. So it's a fair amount to read through. So we'll break it off here. Come back to you and read on from Be Strong, Correctly Behaved, and Self-Controlled. Thanks a lot for listening. Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.